Hey, Dog Speak Geeks, do you know that we offer virtual lessons? You can sign up at any time through info@dogspeak101.com. Also, don't miss out on our dog communication seminar on demand or one of our live seminars in Middle Tennessee. We would love to assist you with any and all problems that you have, so give us a call, set up your session today. Hey, Dog Speak Geeks. Hope your week is going amazingly well for you. Couple announcements before I jump into the episode. Number one is you have 1 day left to send in your spooky stories. Send me your story of a spooky event that happened that involved your dog. Maybe your dog saw something you didn't and it freaked you out. Whatever it is, get it into me, right? info@dogspeak101.com. Put in the subject line, spooky season, and I will be reading those on the podcast for next week's episode because it's spooky season and I'm going out of town next week, so I need to pre-record that. All right, I hope you guys are enjoying the things that I have been putting out. I hope that you are enjoying the social media posts, our YouTube videos, and if you're not signed up for those, please go and do that. And if you're not signed up for the newsletter, you're missing out. What are you doing with your life? So make sure that you sign up for all of those to ensure that you are getting all the specials, all the announcements, all the opportunities that we have laid out for you guys. Now, the communication course that we have online, I put out a huge discount code. Like the only thing better is that it would be free. 85% off. It's going to give it to you for less than $14 because that includes some tax on there that they put on there. But less than $14, you can have access to the dog communication course to understand how your dog is communicating. Now, I only put out so many coupons a couple of weeks ago. We put it out in the newsletter first, and then I mentioned it on the podcast, and then I think I put it out on social media. But look, you guys ran with it. So this is what I'm going to do for you if you've missed out. I'm going to give you guys a few more coupons. So there's a limited amount available. I just added in more coupons. For those that have been dragging their feet, or maybe you're new to the podcast, or you just forgot about it, you need this course if you want to learn to understand your dog's behavior better, understand their emotions, communicate with them, really build that trust, and create that everlasting bond that we all desire with our dog. This communication course will help you to see what your dog is telling you using their body language. Not to mention, there are things that you can learn to do to communicate with dogs as well, especially if you're working in some type of rescue environment or shelter environment where you have dogs that are stressed out, nervous, don't necessarily have a positive association with people. If you can come in there communicating them like a dog would communicate using passive signals, you're going to help that dog feel more relaxed and more sure of himself, and you're going to be able to create a relationship faster than someone who gets in there and baby talks and tosses treats. Not that that's a terrible thing, it's just not the appropriate thing to do with scared dogs. So make sure that you are getting that. You'll have the link in the show notes, and the coupon code is in the show notes, so be sure you get that. It will be gone. When these coupons are gone, they're gone. When this 85% off is gone, it is gone. I'm not adding any more. This is the last time I'm adding. So be sure you get it today. Otherwise, you're going to have to pay $85. So I know that $14 is much better than $85. So be sure that you go and do that today. All right, that's all the announcements I have for that. I want to get into some common questions that pet owners have. Now, I'm going to pick, there are five categories I'm going to pick questions from. And basically, I looked up what are the most common questions pet owners have, and it gave me a list. And so what I'm going to do is the five categories, I have randomly chosen the numbers, and I'm going to read the questions that go along with those numbers, and I'm going to answer those questions based on my experience, my knowledge, and my opinions. I will also be picking numbers to write about in our next newsletter, which comes out tomorrow. So if you want to have a total of 10 common questions that pet owners have, if you want to know my thoughts on those, and you're listening to this, and you're not signed up for the newsletter, go sign up for the newsletter. You can sign up through our website, sign up for the newsletter so you can get those five extra questions answered. Now, the categories are health and wellness, okay, relationship and communication, behavior and training, emotion and stress, and lifestyle and enrichment. So I'm going to start with something that I know I can probably go a little bit faster with, because I know that once I get into the behavior aspect of things and stress, I might go on a little rabbit trail, and this may turn into something more than just common pet owner questions. So let's get started. Let's start with health and wellness. I know I can get through that fairly quickly. And the question is, what are the signs of allergies in dogs? So the common signs of allergies, and I know that a lot of you guys already know this, but if you're a new pet owner and maybe you're not sure if what your dog is exhibiting constitutes as an allergy, but typical signs are going to include some skin issues. So it may be itchy and dry. There may be a little redness on the skin. There may be some rashes, or you may even see some hives. Now, those hives will often come fairly quickly from whatever is causing the allergic reaction. Whatever that allergen is, typically rashes and hives will show up fairly quickly, whereas something like itchy skin, it may take a little while for those allergens to build up in order for that itchy skin to get to a point where you're really noticing it. Chronic ear infections, that is a big one. I see a lot of dogs with chronic ear infections due to too much yeast in their body. And the main issue I see with those dogs is that they're on a poor diet that is full of sugar. And what does yeast feed off of? Sugar. So again, I always will go back to gut health and nutrition, right? So many times I see people complain that their dog gets ear infections because they swim a lot. Can your dog get ear infections because of swimming? Absolutely. But I will tell you that the majority of ear infections I see are going to come from a buildup of yeast. Of course, you're going to get some GI issues, maybe some loose stool, maybe a little bit of diarrhea, but also flatulence, right? Flatulence is a sign. If your dog has bad flatulence, right? If your dog is running you out of the room passing gas, your dog has a sensitivity to something and it's causing a reaction. Now, allergies can get a little worse when you get into it to where maybe the dog has some respiratory problems, right? Maybe they're sneezing a lot, coughing a lot, their nose is running. Maybe they are, getting some eye gunk that are coming out, and that kind of goes along with that upper respiratory issue. And then, of course, you want to look at if your dog is doing a lot of licking or chewing on themselves. We definitely need to look at that to see, are we having allergies, or is my dog having some anxiety? But truly, sometimes anxiety is created because of the allergies. So you want to definitely take your dog's overall health, that external that you're seeing, those external signs that you're seeing, and you need to start making notes, right? Is your dog licking their paws up to 30 minutes after they eat, but they don't do it any other time? If that's the case, then your dog is having some type of reaction to something in the food. Does your dog go out and play in the grass And then 30 minutes later, it comes in and is showing hives on the belly. Could be this dog is having a reaction to the grass in the yard. Now, there are lots of different types of grasses. So just because your dog is allergic to the grass in your yard doesn't mean they're going to be allergic to all grasses. Where I live, it is very common to have a variety of grass in one yard. So we tend to put allergies kind of in a big box and say, look, it has to fit in this box. That box holds like grass, pollen, dust, chicken, potatoes, right? But sometimes we need to break it down, right? Potatoes, is it a sweet potato or a white potato? How do you know? Is it a Bermuda grass or is it a Kentucky 31 grass? How do you know? That tree, is it a willow tree or is it an oak tree that they are allergic to? So when we just say a blanket statement, that is not fixing the problem. And that could actually reduce your dog's ability to enjoy his environment. So I encourage you guys, if your dogs are suffering from some type of allergy or sensitivity, please, 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 first and foremost, what I'm doing is looking at food. Ensure that you are feeding a really good, solid food that is healthy, that is beneficial, that is on our list, so that you know you are getting the best of the best. And if you don't know what that looks like, shoot us an email and I will be happy to share our list with you. Actually, I believe we have our list on our Thinkific site. So dogspeakgeek.thinkific.com, link in the show notes. I believe we have our recommended food list free to download there. So go and get that so that you know you are feeding your dog the right food. If your dog is struggling with different foods and you've tried different foods, then I really encourage you to do a sensitivity and intolerance test. And you can do it through 5 strands. Feel free to send us an email. I'll be happy to send you the link for that. We do have an affiliate code. So if you are going to use it, we'd appreciate if you would use our code. It's 5strands.com/#dogspeak. And that will give you our affiliate code so that, we can get recognition for that. Because I do love the 5 strands test. I did it with Willow not too long ago. It was fantastic. I have done a similar test for myself to decrease the inflammation in my body based off what I've been eating. And I was finding that a lot of the foods that I really like and that I was eating a lot of trying to be healthy cause inflammation. Shrimp was a big thing, and eggs. I was eating eggs on a daily basis, and I was eating a lot of shrimp because it was high in protein and easy for me to ingest a good amount because I don't eat that much. Unfortunately, both egg yolks and shrimp are one of my inflammatory foods, and that's why I was not being able to decrease the size of my stomach. And I work out. I go to the gym. I lift weights. I don't do a ton of cardio. But I knew that the way I was working out, I should not be having a belly that was not pleasant for me. So finding that out has made a huge difference. And I can definitely tell a difference when I eat the foods that cause inflammation. If I eat it once, it's usually not the end of the world. But if I eat my inflammatory foods and I stack those over a period of days, then I can definitely tell a difference in my stomach and my midsection, but also in my brain health. I'm definitely much more on edge when my stomach is inflamed, and I just don't tolerate the animals rubbing on me as much. I don't tolerate noises as well. When typically if I'm feeling good, not a lot of things bother me. Not a lot of things bother me. So that is a big thing, always looking at gut health first and foremost. Now, I said I was going to go quick on that type of question, but I did not because, again, I found a little rabbit trail for that one. All right, so let's go to the next one I hope I answered enough for that for you guys. Let's go with lifestyle and enrichment. And the question there we have, how long can I leave my dog home alone? This is a good question. I think a lot of people ask this question, especially new pet owners. And I think that that question that came up to me 20 years ago is very different than that question today. 20 years ago, it was very common for dogs to be left alone 8 to 10 hours a day. That was common practice. They were left in the house. They had access to outside sometimes. Sometimes they were in a crate. But it was normal to have that 8 to 10 hour period, where now people work from home more. They can get groceries delivered. They can get food delivered. They can get household supplies delivered. They work from home remotely. It's like they don't have a ton of reason to leave the house for long stretches of time. Now, this is good and bad. It's good because your dog isn't left that much. It's bad for when you do need to leave your dog for long periods, if you've not taught them how to do that, if you've not kind of acclimated them to being alone for that long, they may struggle. So I think it's a personal preference. And I say personal preference as your situation is very different than my situation. And I think that you have to figure out what it's going to look like for your dog and how to make that as pleasant for your dog as possible. 8 hours is a lot, right? That's a long time for a dog to be alone. But I think it's doable if a dog is used to that, right? Especially if you have someone who is gone 8 hours through the day, but they're very active prior to leaving those 8 hours or very active after those 8 hours, right? That dog is still getting everything it needs. Willow is left for typically, I think the longest I've left her, I think it's like 5 or 6 hours. And it's rare because usually there's someone here. But if I know I'm going to be gone something like 7, 8, 9 hours, again, very rare, I will make sure that I get someone to come and let her out. And it's not so much about needing to potty. It's about making sure that she is feeling like that she's not necessarily alone or feeling like she needs to feel anxious because it's something new. So again, your dog may be fine at 9, 10 hours, but you also have a dog that may not be good after 4 hours. It's going to depend on your environment. I just say that you need to ensure that you're giving your dog the skills to be left alone for that long. So what do? Let's make sure we're getting them good exercise, make sure that we are meeting their genetic needs through enrichment, a good food to ensure gut health. Keep in mind that majority of serotonin, and I'm talking 70% plus of serotonin, is actually formed in the gut. And serotonin is our calming chemical, right? It's for relaxation. So if it's being formed in the gut, then we need good gut health to ensure that your dog has that serotonin and so that they are able to handle that time alone. If you have multiple dogs in the house, usually it's a lot easier for them if you have to be gone 9, 10 hours. If you're giving them access to potty somewhere, whether that's a small doggy door for a small section of your yard, maybe that's an indoor potty system. I am not a fan of giving dogs free access to a large yard when no one's home for several reasons. One, sometimes I don't want to trust people. There's some crazy people out there that call themselves dog rescuers, and they will just take pets out of yards because they think they shouldn't be there for that long when no one's home. And I don't agree with it, but unfortunately it happens. But I also don't like the fact that especially smaller dogs, if you have large birds in your area and small dogs, they can actually get injured. as well when no one is there. And if you have a dog who is reactive, excessive barking, has a high prey drive, if you're giving them access to the outdoors all the time and you're not there to interrupt behavior, then you're teaching them to kind of stay in a high state of arousal without an interruption, which means that their baseline is going to change. Your reactivity is going to get worse. I know a lot of people will say, well, gosh, I give them access to the yard all day. You think they'd be relaxed so that when we went on a walk, they wouldn't be so barky and lungy. The opposite is true. They are staying in such a high state of arousal that by the time you take them for a walk when you get home, they're already at like number 8 out of 10. And so it's not going to take them long to get to that 10 mark of lunging and barking. So I don't like that kind of free access when no one's there to interrupt the behavior. We want dogs to have good rest. They need good rest. And sometimes the best rest they get is when no one is home. Because no one's there to get up and go to the kitchen because you're working in the office. Then you get up and go to the kitchen. You go check the mail. You go to the bathroom, right? Your dog isn't getting enough rest when you're there. So sometimes you need to leave the house in order to give your dog some good rest. Now, when I'm home and Willow is needing to rest, I put her in her crate. She has the fan on. She has her noise machine on. And that is her nap time. She is in there right now as I'm recording this. She usually goes in there after breakfast. Well, I feed her breakfast in there. So we get up. We're up for about an hour, hour and a half. I then feed her in her crate. And then she's in there for another hour to an hour and a half. Then she's out for a few hours before taking another nap based on what my schedule is. But that's the typical schedule. So she's kind of used to that pattern that we have and that predictability. If I need to leave, nothing changes. She goes in there, fan is on, noise machine is on. The only thing that's different is that my backpack that I take with me is not hanging on my closet door. And she knows when that backpack is not there, I am more than likely not in the house. If the backpack is there, I am somewhere in the house, but she again knows that she is just in there to relax and that I will come and get her shortly. So just prepare your dog, regardless of how long you're going to need to be gone. You know, don't be like, I never leave my dog, but more than an hour at a time. And then one day you're like, hey, I'm going to a concert and I got to leave him for 10 hours. Yeah, your dog's not going to do well with that. So I would encourage a pet sitter, a dog walker, a neighbor, a friend, someone who can come hang out with your dog for a little bit, let them out to potty, just so that they're not feeling kind of thrown for a loop because you did not prepare them for that. That's the answer for that one. And I'm not going to tell y'all what the questions are for the newsletter. You're just going to have to go sign up. But I will give you another question from that lifestyle and enrichment as well as health and wellness in the newsletter. But you'll have to go to that to find out what that is. So let's go now into, I'm thinking, let's go with relationship and communication. You know that communication is one of my absolute favorites. It's one of my favorite things to talk about because I do think that if you don't have clear communication, if you cannot communicate with each other, you can't build trust. And if you can't build trust, you can't build a relationship. So it truly goes hand in hand. So the question for relationship and communication is going to be, how do I strengthen my bond with my dog? Y'all, I'm not kidding you. I'm not kidding. I literally just picked numbers randomly for these questions. And the universe is giving me exactly what I like to talk about. How do I strengthen my bond with my dog? I just said it. Perfect. You've got to learn how to communicate with your dog. You have to learn how to read what your dog is communicating with you. If you cannot read when your dog is telling you, I need space, I'm nervous, I'm uncomfortable, I'm overwhelmed. If you cannot read those, you're going to have a hard time getting your dog to look at you for guidance, trust you, and really have that bond that we all truly want. right? And it's easy to know when your dog is happy. Most people can be like, oh yeah, I can totally tell when my dog is happy. There's no pressure there figuring that out. But if I ask people, well, how do you know when your dog is stressed? They can typically give me an answer. But the problem is that that answer usually means that that what they're seeing didn't just happen. That they have been stressed out for quite some time and it's been building up. And, you know, because a lot of times when dogs are nervous, you're not going to see the big signs like tail tucked, shaking, trembling, cowering. By the time a dog gets to that, it's bad, right? We're looking for things like, is your dog looking you in the eyes or is he turning his head? Is your dog yawning at you? Is the dog ignoring you or giving you eye contact? Is the dog sniffing the ground or looking to you to see what is coming next? All right, is your dog coming in for pets or is your dog walking away and looking at something invisible on the floor? How do you know when your dog is not feeling comfortable in an environment? How many of you take your dogs to patios, cafes, parks? How do you know when your dog is feeling stressed? Because that stress can start in very small actions. And when we don't pay attention to it, it builds up. It's stress stacking. And it builds up to where your dog will give you some type of action, also known as a reaction, to something where you're going to think it came out of the blue. And it totally did not come out of the blue. The dog's been trying to tell you, you just weren't listening. It's like if any of you have kids, you might tell a kid, you know, go sit down. And you say it calmly, right? Go sit down. Can you go sit down? And then you have to scream at that kid to go sit down. I don't want your dog having to scream at you to get you to pay attention to what they're feeling. Because by the time that they're screaming at you, you've already put them into a place that is very unhealthy for their system, for their brain, for their body, for their confidence. And it's just, I don't know how else to explain how important dog communication is and understanding it. I don't even know what other words I have. Maybe I need to get on chat. I've named my chat GPT guy Charlie. Maybe I need to ask Charlie, hey Charlie, give me the absolute best way to explain how important it is to communicate to my listeners and dog owners and professionals how important it is to learn to read your dog's body language and emotions. Not just the clear ones, but the ones, the subtle signs that are being given before the clear ones. If we could read that, then the majority of dogs would not be suffering from reactivity. If owners learn how to read their dog's stress levels and their communication and their body language, we would not have the amount of reactive dogs that we have in this world. I will stand by that, and I will bet whatever I have on it. We would have less reactivity if people would learn how to read their dog's body language. So there you go on that. I mean, that's just the number one thing that you can do. And I think that anybody that's going to be around dogs, own dogs, have dogs, work with dogs, you need to know those subtle signs and you need to learn how to be respectful of those, how to respond appropriately, and how to help your dog navigate the environments when there are people and dogs in their environment that are being disrespectful of the subtle signs that your dog is giving. Because it's not just you communicating back with your dog. It is about understanding that your dog may need a little assistance when there are other people or other dogs in the environment that are being disrespectful. All right, so there goes on that one. I feel like I got through that one pretty good. Probably because I spent a couple minutes at the beginning of the episode talking about communication. And I'm telling you guys, I'm going to keep preaching about it. This maybe it just needs to be a podcast on dog communication. But again, that's very challenging to do on audio. But if you can get it online on my course, you can see the videos and see it in action. And a lot of the videos are in slow motion. I slow it down for you to help you out. All right. So that is our relationship and communication. I can't wait to see what the question is for the newsletter. All right. Let's go into emotions and stress. And then, I'm going to go into behavior and training first because I have a feeling that emotions and stress, I love talking about that. So I'm going to go into behavior and training, and my question for that is going to be, I'm just picking all the right ones today. Why does my dog get so anxious when I leave? Great question on this. Great question. And it may even go back to what we were talking about as for how long can your dog be alone. There's a lot of reasons why your dog may get anxious. One could be that they have no confidence. And they don't know how to self-soothe or self-regulate their emotions. Two, if you're not, okay, I'm not going to do it with numbers, but if you're not leaving on a regular basis, then, and really it doesn't happen often, you may create a little bit of anxiety in your dog because they're not sure what is about to take place. They don't know how long you're going to be gone. You're doing something that is not a part of their regular day. Right? Dogs feed off of predictability. They like patterns, right? They like predictable patterns of precedence. They like to know what we're going to see, what's going to happen. You know, they kind of like to know the routine. I hate the word routine, but they like to know what it is. And if you just randomly leave the house without really setting any expectations or without meeting your dog's needs, that's going to produce some anxiety. And if your dog has not learned how to be alone, and that is a thing, dogs need to learn how to live in isolation. And I say live in isolation as far as, you know, hanging out alone for some time, you know, not with another dog, not with their cat, but just alone, just to have that calming time. Is that a natural thing for dogs? No, they're social animals. So are we. But it doesn't mean we don't need our alone time. But if you've never been alone, you're going to have a hard time dealing with that. Or if you're not sure about yourself, right? If you're not confident within yourself, if you don't love yourself enough, you might suffer from being alone. It may be too hard for you. So your dog, it's lack of confidence can create issues, can cause anxiety. Could be that when you leave, they don't have their secure blanket. They don't have their secure attachment. And scary things happen, right? Maybe you have construction happening near your house and random booms are happening and no one is there to help the dog navigate that. So there are a lot of reasons for anxiety. But I would say that the main ones are going to be that the dog has not been set up to know how to be alone. There's no pattern there. So there's no predictableness that the dog is unsure what's happening. You're going out the door and they're like, are you going to the mailbox? Are you going to talk to the neighbor? Are you running to your car? Are you going to be gone for 20 minutes? Are you going to be gone for 4 hours? I don't know. And that uncertainty can absolutely create anxiety. And just think about if you might be one of those people that need to know what is about to happen. You don't like surprises. You like to have a routine. You like to have a plan. You don't do very well at flying by the seat of your pants. Dogs, I believe, have similar personalities where they like to have a plan. Maybe they're very methodical. They're not willy-nilly. I'm a fairly fly by the seat of my pants in certain situations. And then there are certain situations I like to know the plan. It depends on what the situation is. I feel like that Willow is very similar to me, that she's just kind of go with the flow, willy-nilly, whatever. but that she appreciates that there are certain times that there is predictability. And that's just going to take time with your dog to learn. But the important thing is that you start being aware of that. And then aware of your own feelings. If you're willy-nilly and fly by the seat of your pants, and your dog needs a more, formulated action plan, then be respectful of that and try to create some predictability for your dog. Just because you're willy-nilly doesn't mean your dog is. And that you two are separate entities and different thought processes and different learning styles and experiences and needs, genetic needs. Ensuring that your dog does have his needs met genetically, setting up a nice predictable pattern such as a good licky mat, the brown noise machine, having their own spa room where they understand that it's relaxation can make a huge difference. So the spa room for me is really for every dog, not just the dogs that are anxious, but every dog, because it does allow us to set up predictability and communicate to the dog that, hey, you're going to be hanging out here for a little bit. And then over time, those environmental cues, like the noise machine, is going to tell the brain what the expectation is, which is relaxation. And so it can be very handy for other adventures. So if you do have a dog that is extremely anxious, if you have a dog who is injuring themselves, trying to escape, salivating heavily, maybe they're defecating or urinating in the house, that is a problem that's beyond just common anxiety. That is getting into more of a severe case of separation anxiety, and you absolutely need to reach out to a professional. Your dog may need a little bit of pharmacological. Boy, did I do that one good. Help and assistance with that, whether that is through, meds from your vet or holistic care, Chinese herbs, rescue remedy, CBD, something like that. But you definitely you want to reach out to someone who is an expert in that. Ness Jones, we did an episode with her a few months back, and she is an expert with separation anxiety. So go back and listen to that episode and then find her on the internet. She's easy to look up. She is in New Zealand, but she does virtual consultations as well, and she is just fabulous. So if you're having some serious anxiety when you leave the house, you need professional help. This is not just a dog not knowing what the plan is and feeling a little anxious with that. But I don't think that's what that question was really about. But you can go back and listen to that episode if you feel like that you are struggling with that, or your dog is struggling with that. All right, so I think that does well with the behavior and training aspect of it. And the last one for this episode is for emotions and stress. One of my favorite things to talk about. I've been talking about emotions and stress quite a bit lately. And I am working on a project that is around emotions and stress. I will continue to drop hints for you guys. But let's see, what's our question for this under emotions and stress? Our question is, how can I build my dog's confidence? Oh, good question. Great question. So building confidence. There are a lot of different things that we can do to build confidence. Of course, I'm gonna say it. Make sure your dog has good gut health. That's the very first thing. If you don't have gut health, then the confidence is going to be hard to build. So good gut health. All right. The second thing, I love to teach my dog problem solving skills. And one of the ways that I used to teach problem-solving skills, and I haven't done it with Willow yet, but you know what? I think I'm going to do it, and I'll video it so I can show you guys. But for years and years and years, I would do hand feeding with all of my dogs, and at least once a day. And hand feeding is not me just feeding them by my hand, but it was about them learning how to offer behavior in order to elicit a verbal marker response from me, which in turn produced a piece of food. So if my dog would put their butt on the floor, I would say, good girl, and they would get some of their food. They would stand up. I would say, good girl. I would give them some food. Maybe they look to the left or look to the right. I would mark that, give them food. Basically, I was just looking at any behavior they offered me. And as long as I didn't mind seeing it repeated, I would mark it with my verbal and give them food. Some of you may have heard this as 101 things to do with a box in clicker training. And this is similar to that. I just didn't use a box. I mean, you certainly can use a box, and you just would mark your dog's behavior for any interaction with the box. And what this does is it helps a dog to learn that they can do things to try to get something instead of sitting there like a bump on a log waiting to be told what to do. The other thing is making sure that you are not punishing your dog for making decisions. Do you know that when your dog jumps on the counter, he's making a decision? When your dog stands with 4 feet on the floor by your counter, he's making a decision. If you reward one decision, or most people ignore the decision of 4 feet on the floor by the counters, if you ignore that, and then they jump up on the counter, and you punish that, a dog is going to be afraid over time to make choices. Right? If we're punishing bad choices, then how can you expect to get the good choices? Let me give you an example that I used to use all the time, and I don't think I've used it in a while, but I'm going to use it. I'm going to put you in your dog's little paws for a second. Let's say that you are sitting at a table with a 500-piece puzzle, and your job is to put this puzzle together. Now, you have a couple advantages here. You have a picture of what the puzzle, a picture of what the puzzle is supposed to look like. All right, you have an advantage. Unfortunately, dogs, when they're putting puzzles together, they don't have a picture to go by. Now, you can look at a picture and say, oh, okay, this goes here. The other thing is, on a puzzle, you got pieces that go along the edge. You know the edge pieces, easy to start with. But I'm talking about these middle pieces. If you're sitting at this puzzle, and every time that you picked up a puzzle piece and you tried it in a spot, and it didn't fit, and you got yelled at, how long do you think it would take before you didn't want to play the puzzle anymore? Not long, would it? That's a 500 pieces. Do you know how many puzzle pieces you would get wrong before you found the right puzzle piece? A lot. If you got punished for all those wrong ones, we would never get you to the right puzzle piece. Now, let's imagine this. Let's say that when you got the wrong puzzle piece, you didn't get in trouble. Consequence was that it just didn't fit. And you would learn on your own that that puzzle piece doesn't fit there. No one would have to tell you. You would learn over time. It may take you 3 or 4. I know I've been that person who was like, I just know this piece fits. And I would push it and push it and push it and try to make it fit. And it just didn't fit. So the consequence was, okay, that doesn't fit. So I've learned now that puzzle piece does not go there. That does not work. Now, let's say that every time you get the right puzzle piece, maybe I gave you $1 and I said, great job. And maybe it wasn't even every puzzle piece. Maybe it was only half the puzzle pieces, half the right puzzle pieces, right? 500-piece puzzle at $1 piece, you've earned $250 if I just did half. I did nothing when you got the wrong ones, but I gave you $1 on every other one you got right. Do you think that you would be better at puzzles the next time? Absolutely. You'd be more confident. You'd probably get that next puzzle put together a little bit faster. You'd be more motivated. But if I was punishing you for the wrong puzzle pieces, you would absolutely hate doing puzzles. You would definitely hate doing puzzles in front of me. You'd be scared to do puzzles. And not only would you start doubting your ability to do puzzles, but you would start doubting your ability to make decisions in other situations in your life. That is harmful. And yet, that is how many people are training dogs today. What I just explained to you, if I do both, right, I'm going to punish you for the wrong puzzle pieces and give you a dollar for the right puzzle pieces. We would call that balanced training. But again, how many times are you going to get the wrong puzzle piece versus the right? I promise you that 500 right puzzle pieces, you're going to probably do about 1,500 wrong puzzle pieces. So we're looking at 1,500 times correction to 500 times praise and reward. Does that sound balanced to you? I didn't think so. But yet, that's what balanced trainers talk about. If I just say, look, the consequence to the puzzle piece not fitting is the fact that it just doesn't fit. There doesn't need to be any type of above and beyond correction there. I don't need to yell at you and scream at you and tell you how stupid you are and how bad you are and how dumb you are and hit you upside the head. I don't have to do that. But if I stand there and I encourage you and I reward you for the right puzzle pieces, man, I'm going to really build your confidence up. And this is why I don't agree with balance training either. So it really is something that if we start to allow our dogs to make decisions, right or wrong, that is how we build confidence. Teaching dogs to make decisions and not be afraid to make decisions. Punishing all the wrong things that a dog can do is going to prevent them from wanting to learn the right thing. And that is why when you see dogs that have been trained using aversive techniques, many of them just sit there like a bump on a log until they're told what to do. And in society's eyes, they look well trained. But from professionals who know how to read body language and understand, they're not well trained. They're just too damn afraid to do anything that their owner doesn't tell them to do. And what kind of life is that? That's not confidence. It's called compliance. It's not confidence. So if we want to start building confidence in our dogs, we've got to start teaching them how to problem solve. And I love hand feeding. And I love helping them to, learn to make those decisions. But again, my dog is making decisions all day long. When I'm feeding the cats, my dog has a decision to make. Does she keep four on the floor? Or does she stand up on the counters to see if she can reach one of the cans of cat food? She has a decision to make. How I handle that makes all the difference. I can ignore it if there's nothing she can get. The wrong puzzle piece, it just doesn't fit. I can interrupt it, right? Because maybe she can reach the cat food and I don't really want her getting the can. All right, I can interrupt it. I don't have to punish it. Just interrupt it. Being like, nope, don't really want that to work. Or I can acknowledge her for having four on the floor around the cat food and really appreciating that. I could easily ask her to sit and stay. Not a lot of problem solving in that though. And this is where we have to have a balance between obedience training and commanding behavior versus letting a dog figure it out. When I let my dog outside, I don't care what behavior my dog shows as long as they wait for permission to go outside. There are times that she's really excited. And I don't care if she wants to hop around on her feet, if she wants to put her butt on the floor, if she wants to stand there, I don't care. Just wait until I give you permission to go outside so that you're not running over anybody. Could I ask her to sit and stay? Absolutely. Do I do that periodically? Sometimes. But overall, I like to allow my dog to make choices when I'm able to. Sometimes the choices are as simple as what collar do you want to wear today? What treat would you like? You have two choices of chew bones. I'm going to hold one in each hand. Which one would you like? Those little things can help to build that confidence. Having a really good verbal marker telling your dog what a good baby they are on a regular basis, man, that will build some confidence up. 300 times a day, easy. I tell my dog, good girl. At least 300 times a day, good girl. And let me tell you something. She does not have the big Roddy head, which I wanted. She doesn't have the big Roddy head. But she does have a big head with confidence because of how I have been just acknowledging good behavior on a regular basis. And I can see how resilient she is. She still gets nervous at looking some things. She's an adolescent. But she has the confidence to try. And here's the most important part is that if she's not sure, she will look to me and almost ask me to help her or just to be there with her. She'll just look for that kind of affirmation. Like, is this good? We're good, right? And it's not out of a pitifulness. It's out of a partnership. And it's beautiful. Man, it's beautiful. So that's a really good way to start building confidence, problem solving. But you have to get away from picking and choosing what you want to reward and what you want to scream at. Right? If you're not even consistent on your corrections, you're going to create anxiety and a lack of confidence in your dog. If you don't correct them every single time they jump on the counter, they're going to have a problem with that. Right? So think about this. And I know you're probably sitting there going, what? What is she saying? If I punished you for the wrong puzzle piece inconsistently, okay? So we'll say variable. Variable reinforcement is very powerful. It's going to make someone keep doing something because they don't know when that reward's going to happen. So if I'm rewarding you at 1 every 5, that means I'm going to get more behavior from you because you're going to keep doing it. If I reward you at every one of them, you're probably going to start losing the desire to do it. If I am punishing you at every single time you do something, you're going to stop doing that behavior very quickly. Okay. But also, if I start punishing you randomly in a behavior, you're going to keep doing the behavior, but you're going to start feeling anxious each time you do the behavior for fear that's the time you're going to get corrected. So going to the puzzle, you go to put the puzzle piece in, you're going to be like, I don't know if this is going to be a punishment or not. So I'm going to try it. And then if I don't punish you, you're going to be like, whew, that was good. And then the next one you try, you're like, I don't know if this is going to be a punishment. And then I don't punish you, you're going to be like, oh, good. And then you do another one, but I punish you on that one. Crap. Then that next one, going to create anxiety again. So you're actually going to have more anxiety. If I just know I'm going to get punished every time I do something, there's no anxiety to that. I just know, and I'm going to stop doing it. But if it's freaking random, I don't know. And that's how anxiety grows. You know, it's similar to growing up. I had a mother that was not consistent in her behavior towards me. I knew she loved me, but her behavior towards me was inconsistent. I literally didn't know which version I would get on a daily basis, and not sometimes not even a daily basis, but an hourly basis. And that is very anxiety inducing. You may live with someone like that. You may be that person where you're very emotional, moody, right? Moody is that word that was always growing up. Gosh, you're so moody. One minute you're laughing, next minute you're crying. Those are typical hormones for teenagers. But as adults, we learn how to manage those emotions and get to the root cause of them and how to respond appropriately to them. But if we have somebody in our life that is not consistent, then you're going to start creating anxiety when they show up, right? So I wouldn't even, you know, if I would start getting anxious when she walked in the house, then I would get anxious when she pulled in the drive. Then I would get anxious when I started to know what her consistent time was. So if she got home at 4 o'clock, I might have started getting anxious at 3:30. So you can see how, you know, and let's say she even came in at 4 o'clock and she was in a good mood. That good mood may alleviate the anxiety I'm feeling, but I still felt anxiety. So I'm still practicing that behavior. So I hope by understanding all of that, you can get an idea about your behavior towards your dog and how you act on a regular basis can absolutely be detrimental to your dog's confidence, or it can help build your dog's confidence. Teaching them problem-solving skills. Teaching them how to think for themselves. And of course, making sure they have really good gut health. So I hope this helps you guys today and some of the common problems that or common questions that pet owners ask. I thought these were some really good ones. And I'm going to answer 5 more of those from the same categories in the newsletter that will come out tomorrow. So make sure that you're signed up and you don't miss out on that. Because I think we're going to get some good questions for there too. And of course, I might find one on there that I'm going to need to do another episode on. Who knows? But be sure that you guys are sending me in your spooky stories with your dog. And even if it is, you know, maybe it's not your dog. Just whatever spooky stories you have, send them in. I'm going to read them on the pod. I'm going to put that out next week. Remember, these are your kind of last chances to get 85% off the dog communication course using coupon code DOGSPOOK. There's only so many coupons available. You guys have been hitting it hard. So I've added extra coupons for those that are missing out to give you a chance to get it, because this is so important, as you've heard throughout this episode. And let's see, I think that's all I got. Spooky season is here and Halloween's right around the corner and I'm super excited. If you guys have any questions, if you have any episode ideas, things that you would like for me to cover, talk about, shoot me an email. Be sure you're following us on social media and do me a huge favor. If you can rate and review wherever you guys listen, that really helps us to find new listeners. If you would like extra content, we do have our Patreon page for as little as $5 a month. Our Patreon page I've got right now, we are doing a series on leash manners, on teaching your dog leash manners. Walking manners truly is what I'm talking about. But the leash is a part of that. But truly talking about walking manners. And there'll be some opportunities coming up in 2026 for Patreon members to be doing some special VIP Zooms, question and answer sessions, all those fun things. So be sure that you guys are following us and signing up so that you can continue to get all the wonderful knowledge and education that I'm sharing with you to help you have the absolute best, most amazing relationship with your dogs. I'm telling you, the relationship that Willow and I have, I want all of you to feel that because it absolutely is very special. And it's not, it has nothing to do with me being a dog trainer, okay? It has everything to do with me being a partner with her, understanding her as an individual, and then helping her to navigate this world that truly isn't set up for her, but helping her to navigate that and truly being her partner. And that upper management and tour guide that she needs. All right, I hope you guys have a wonderful rest of your week and get out, enjoy this weather if you're having wonderful weather. Give your dog lots of love. Tell them that you adore them and that you're going to learn all about their body language and how they communicate with you so that you can be the best friend that they truly deserve.